The Shame of Finding Your Younger Self Online by Jacob Brogan. My first week of grad school, a few of my new peers already knew me by my publication record. I wasn't a prodigy. My writing hadn't appeared in some prestigious scholarly journal. Instead, they'd Googled their way to an essay I'd written almost a decade before. One in which I enthusiastically declared my love for playing Dungeons and Dragons in the young adult section of my local public library. And no, I'm not linking to it for you. I don't think they'd looked hard. It was easy to find at the time. A bright beacon of shame on the first page of my Google results. But imagine my embarrassment when I realised that this was their first impression of me. As future English professors, they read it with care, calling out adolescent quirks of word choice and syntax that I would have rather left behind. I never quite lived it down, if only because I imagined that my colleagues never forgot. To be clear though, Dungeons & Dragons itself wasn't the problem. I still play, I still love libraries, and I don't care who knows. To the contrary, it was my youthful sincerity that ate at me. Free of cynicism and guile, my prose read like the work of another writer. It marked me as a fraud, a wholly different creature from the urbane sophisticate I wanted so badly to be. Think of that moment when your parents insist on showing baby pictures to your latest partner. Even as they coo, you can feel your face flush, unable to reconcile this hapless earlier version of yourself with the mature facade you've long since erected. This is why the telltale traces of all our pasts sometimes fill us with shame, even when they're not particularly shameful. In the age of Google, intrusions of personal history into present reality have become more common and more unpredictable than ever before. Once upon a time, this mostly played out within families. Children paging through their parents' yearbooks or siblings telling embarrassing stories about one another. But now, anyone can expose us to our earlier selves at any time. For me, it was my long since forgotten adventures in the library. For you, it might be a wild night on the town, a failed ultimate fighting career, or something else, anything else, that you'd rather not recall. At the mercy of algorithms few of us understand, we live with pasts that are always on the verge of bubbling up anew. Evidence that we were once entirely different is never more than a few keystrokes away. This is, of course, a different kind of shame than the sort we normally encounter online. In his much-discussed So You've Been Publicly Shamed, John Ronson describes case after case in which individuals were exposed to widespread public ridicule, often for crimes they had considered harmless. He examines the example of Lindsay Stone, who received death threats after posting a photo from the Arlington National Cemetery that many considered disrespectful. And, of course, there's Justine Sacco, who destroyed her life when a single impolitic and arguably racist tweet went viral. Singled out in every way, Ronson's subjects, and people like them, become the prisoners of others' contempt. As I've argued before, shame involves fragmentation. It's not just that we're cut off from our communities, but that we are divided against ourselves. When, like Stone or Sarko, we do something shameful, that act comes to stand in for our whole person, and we're brought low by the elevation of a single, isolated incident. Today, the very structure of the internet ensures that we'll stumble over the rubble of our pasts. Indeed, the more of our lives we document online, the more common such accidents will become. Unlike chronological social media timelines, the vagaries of search engine optimization leave us with a multiplicity of personal histories, all of them competing for primacy. Even when they speak faintly, they can tell compelling stories about us, whether or not anyone else is listening. Over coffee, an acquaintance told me he'd been a public social conservative during his college years, and that those beliefs had continued to haunt him long after his opinions had shifted to the left. More damning was his internship with a notoriously misogynistic senator, a fact that he now feels compelled to conceal, I think people who see that must assume that I'm some dyed-in-the-wool conservative, he told me. Aware that new colleagues, prospective employees, and others may have come across this information, he constantly finds himself wondering whether he needs to overcompensate to prove that he's not that person anymore. This may be the quintessence of private shame, a knowledge that informs and deforms our behaviour. Under its spell, we limit ourselves in response to the mere possibility that others might discover our old truths. Many of those I've spoken to tell me that they've taken elaborate steps to escape their digital pasts. My formerly conservative friend explained that he's cautious about even revisiting embarrassing search results in private, fearful that he might inadvertently increase their page rank. Another friend, who was once profiled in a widely circulated article about a soft drink, has tried to pile numerous new results on top of old ones to keep people from thinking he's a doofus. He asked me to be circumspect in telling his story, lest years of work go to waste. While he wasn't really that humiliated by anything he'd said in the interview, he worried that it would challenge the image he was trying to convey. Similar fears animate right-to-be-forgotten regulations in Europe and campaigns for them elsewhere. Advocates of such laws claim that they're not trying to get offending or even embarrassing content removed from the internet altogether, just attempting to make it harder to find. As Mark Joseph Stern has argued, these demands nevertheless verge on censorship, which helps explain why Google is pushing back against them. Living in an open access world means living with our histories. Under ordinary circumstances, our pasts always shape present actions. But when they reappear without warning, they do far more. Even in the most benign cases, like my Dungeons & Dragons essay, they can give the lie to our attempts at self-reinvention, suggesting that we're playing roles rather than simply being. But when our ghosts are more malevolent, they threaten to reshape every aspect of our lives. Where public shaming entails alienation from our communities, these smaller shames involve alienation from ourselves. On the internet, we are never far from becoming puppets of the people we were.